Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Kevin Sutherland. How are you, Kevin?
Not bad, Chris, and yourself?
I'm pretty good today, actually.
Excellent.
You're the winemaker and viticulturist at Bluebell Vineyards in England.
I am, yes, deep down in Sussex.
In Sussex?
In Sussex, yes.
All right, you might hear we're actually in the English wine trade tasting at the moment with a...
We are. Have you been having a good show? Enjoying your tastings?
Yeah, wee bit. Yeah.
Too much?
not too much yet. Not too much yet. I'm sort of pacing myself. I've done the still roses.
One needs to.
Still rosés and sparkling rosés. But what I want to talk about is Bluebell Vineyards, because they're a relatively new vineyard to me, although you've been going for a number of years. And also, you're an ex-Plumpton teacher, so...
I am, yes. I've been involved at Bluebell Vineyard since 2004, when the owner, Barry Tay, approached me and asked me to come in and look at the land and see if it's viable to establish a vineyard. We looked over it and worked out that, yes, it would be viable.
I heard it was an old pig sty or something like that.
Yeah, there was one small field that he wanted to trial this vineyard on first. And it's a field that had an awful lot of manure spread.
So very, very high vegetative growth there.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. And this manure spread from 10,000 pigs.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of, pigs there many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And we now have an awful lot of building space.
Oh, is that you're using it for building as opposed to viticulture?
The buildings will be used for storage of the wine in the future.
Yeah. Oh, that's quite handy, actually.
Yes, exactly.
I've been talking to a number of wineries in Anchor Hill in Wales and Rathvinny, and they've had nightmares trying to get building permission.
Yeah, we have multitude buildings that we could use for storage.
Oh, that's quite good.
Exactly.
So you came in when it changed over from...
Barry Tay has had the... he purchased the building, or the farm, the pig farm, as a going concern, and ran it as a pig farm for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the business fell out, and the bottom fell out of the business sort of thing.
That's all those Dutch people.
Exactly, And he then let all the pigs go, and the buildings fell into disrepair. And it lay doing nothing for many years. And so he approached me in 2004. In 2005, we then planted the first field of vines consisting of two varieties of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
This was about 1,400 vines. The then following year, in 2006, we planted a further 13,000 vines, roughly. So that brought our hectare area up to just under 4 hectares.
Still quite small then.
Still very small. Our first harvest was in 2007, off the first area of vines planted, and then subsequently the other fields came online.
What was the reason for selection? Obviously you were involved in the selection, so how did you choose which ones to plant up first?
Well, traditionally in the Northern Hemisphere you would face south.
Yep.
You'd be looking for fields facing south. But these, this first field that we chose is in fact northwest facing.
It goes that's against unusual. Yeah.
Everything that one's taught.
Well, you've been teaching.
Exactly. And is what one would ideally want as a vineyard site. But this is the only piece of land that Barry T had open at the time. And he wanted to trial it, see how it goes first. So we planted these vines in 2005. And they grew like a rocket in their first season's growth. They grew something like 2.5 meters. And put on substantial growth.
Is this because the ones at the pig farm?
Because of all this manure that's been spread.
Yeah. Lots of vegetative growth.
Exactly. So we still did the usual thing, cut back to too bad the first winter's pruning and get them establish a good root structure. I still feel to today there's no point trying to force vines to grow and crop too early because they do not have the root structure to carry the fruit.
Yep.
So, our first crop was in 2007. I think we produced something like about 1,300 bottles. So, for a first crop off that number of vines, it was good.
Yeah. And do you find with all that manure on board, that fertilizer?
Let's call it fertilizer.
That it. Did you get things like leaf burn or anything like that? Because, you know, if you've given nitrogen to a plant.
The growth itself was very good. There was no deficiencies of any mineral types that were present.
No, but sometimes
Excessiveness of anything displaying in the vines itself.
So I would have thought nitrogen levels would be through the roof.
Well, the nitrogen was pretty high, hence why they grew very well, but not to excess that it caused problems for a selection of wood for the pruning for the following season or anything like that. If anybody knows what vines are, then the internodal distance was an ideal distance. It wasn't too excessive because of the rate of growth. They just grew extremely well that year.
Okay, so that's the internodal, though, but there's two parts to that, isn't there? It's like how fast it's coming out, but also how much they stretch.
Yes, yeah. You have on the shoot that grows now, bud burst has just started for our growing season now, and as these shoots, well, these buds grow into shoots, the shoots get longer, and on these shoots you have points or nodes, and these nodes are known as the node points where the buds will emerge from subsequent year.
Yeah, and that was all okay.
Yeah, everything that season, they grew perfectly well.
Did you do any sort of soil analysis?
Yeah. We tested the soil before it was planted, and it proved to be fine.
Is there limestone underneath, or what's underneath it?
Under that particular field, there is actually a bit of clay.
Oh, really?
Again,
so more
not
neutral.
Not the ideal.
Yeah, not in England,
choice,
anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
Clay's great in the right place, so
clay's
we're dry.
Clay's also good in small batches, and providing one prepares the field. You know, the field itself was drained, and we made sure that there was plenty of runoff. It's on a nice gentle slope, and the soil being tested proved to be ideal. Okay, but high in nitrogen, but you know, we could live with that. It meant we don't have to add anything in future years.
Yeah, yeah. And that nitrogen will just come down anyway.
It will do.
And
it has done over the past several years. The growth has started to slow down. The vines started to settle down and become more consistent in their rate of growth now, irrespective of weather conditions in previous years.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that was the first couple of years. You've got your 2007s on. I tried one of your earlier 2008s.
Ah, yes.
Which tasted quite nice. It tasted just like a normal sparkling wine to me, but it had a slight richness on the finish that I almost attributed to a honey note, but not quite.
Not quite. There is more yeastiness and biscuitiness coming through on that.
Yeah.
But the fruit, once the yeastiness dies off, the fruit follows through.
Yeah.
And there is a story behind the particular vintage and 2008 Blanc de Blanc, because it was quite an acidic year.
Yep.
And my style of winemaking, or for at least a Bluebell, is a quite fruit-driven style for all the wines we produce.
Yep.
And this particular year, acidity being quite high, we had multitude tanks of Chardonnay. So about half of them I put through malolactic fermentation, and the other half I left alone with natural acidity on them.
Yep.
So when we come to do the blending, I had two blends, one with malolactic fermentation and the other blend without. And the purpose for that was that the blend with malolactic fermentation that had been through that process would be ready for an earlier release.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And the blend that had not gone through MLF would be laid down for 3-4 years. Well, it's now been down for 35 months.
Yep, yep.
And we decided to riddle and disgorge several bottles, about 2 dozen bottles, quite recently, to trial it.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it ready for the WP tasting today and to gauge people's response on it.
Yeah.
And so far today, it's been very good. So
yeah, no, the wine was nice.
Thank you.
There's a lot of interesting wines this year. Have you been through the wines? Have you tasted some of them?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've been through and selected certain wineries that I wanted to try and to see how they compare.
Yep.
And they are all very different. It would be disappointing if they're all the same.
Yeah. There was quite a lot of more. We're sort of digressing from Bluebell, but just my general impression anyway, because I haven't done rosés, still the sparkling, was that the residual sugar levels, particularly the 09, seemed to be a bit higher, and the acidity didn't sometimes have that piercingness. Some were.
Okay.
But they just didn't have, you know when you're talking about malolactic versus non-malolactic, you know, a lot of English wines have got a real cut to them. And I normally associate with non-malolactic fermentation, but there seemed to be quite a lot more residual sugar in the wines that had sort of softened out. And some of the wines actually almost lacked acidity, not just hidden from the sugar, but actually
not
lacked
there
it
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what was causing that? That was 09 mainly.
It could be that I think 09 from memory, I think was a very good crop. Fruit was relatively ripe.
Yeah.
So acidity levels weren't overly high. Maybe some producers decided to put the wine through malolactic fermentation anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
To soften it even further.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Maybe it's just gone a bit too...
too blousy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, it was...
But that's by their choice, so...
Yeah, yeah, no, it's certainly... By English, what I'm used to anyway, okay, when I'm tasting English wine, you know, I expect my enamel to be dripping off my teeth by the end of the day. And I was going, ooh, that's not quite, you know, the wines were all right, but they just, I normally expect sort of quite high acidity. Anyway, let's get back to Bluebell. there goes the 2009 vintage report for you. English trade tasting. So I was talking to one of your compadres earlier, and he seemed to think you're up to about 20 acres now.
I was working hectares, but
just under 10 hectares.
We are in production at the moment, 6 hectares.
6 hectares, yeah.
And we are currently started yesterday planting 17 hectares.
Yeah, so it's a big
step
up.
So we will be up to 23 hectares fully planted by the end of this year, but that 17 hectares will not come into production until year, 2015.
Yep.
And therefore, the first release from that will not be for another at least 2 years after harvest.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a while to go.
So, yeah.
The vineyards now, are they still northwest facing, or have you got some south slopes now?
No. We still have 3 sites which are northwest facing, and we have 2 sites which are south facing.
Mm-hmm.
The field that we're currently planting is the largest field, and that is dead south. And looks straight down onto the South Downs over the Sussex countryside, past through Plumpton College, and onto the South Downs. So it's a lovely view. A little bit exposed, open to the wind, but I quite prefer that from the vineyard side of things. It helps dry out the canopy and hopefully will reduce disease issues.
Yeah, yeah. And probably fruit set really isn't a problem in England with wind.
Bar last year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, last year was a year to forget.
Yeah.
Due to all the heavy rain, it just knocked the flowers and fruit set was in some places non-existent.
Really? Okay.
Very poor.
Planting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But originally you said you came from Plumpton.
Yeah, my background has been I've been in the wine industry since 1990. I first went to a vineyard, which is no longer in existence, a vineyard called St. George's in East Sussex near Heathfield.
That's where you first worked? Or?
That's where I first worked.
Yep.
And I went there to...
Why did they shut down?
The owner decided to retire and could not find a buyer, so...
Oh, okay.
It's a shame, but yeah.
Yeah.
But I went there to pick fruit initially, did a harvest there. And I ended up staying there for 9 years.
Yep.
And whilst I was there, I learned to manage a vineyard and to make wine. We used to have a German girl come over 3 or 4 times a year, and she has studied wine production. So I leaned over her shoulder and learnt off her. And when she was not there, I did what she asked me to do and learnt all my skills from that particular point.
Yeah, you sound like you've got a slight Antipodean accent.
Yeah, you're going to take a guess?
I would have said Kiwi, but...
Excellent, thank you for that.
Yeah, it's all right.
I know you are too.
Yeah, exactly. But it's quite soft. How long have you been
here? I've been here since 88.
Okay, so quite a while.
25 years.
Yeah. We're originally from...
The Bay of Islands.
Oh, lovely. I was up there a couple of years ago in Russell.
Lovely spot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is that where you're from, Russell?
I'm from Kaiko, slightly further inland.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But I got family living in Kerikeri, Paihia around there. So,
okay,
yeah.
Nice area.
Oh, very nice, yeah.
We hired a house for a week or two with a load of mates and just sort of hung out and enjoyed
excellent,
it up there.
Yeah. I'm hoping to go back again maybe Christmas or just after Christmas this year. So
yeah.
We shall see. Depends how much what the harvest is like this year as to whether or not I can escape from the winery.
What was it like last year? You know, you said it was a pretty wet and hard fruit set.
Well, the springtime was very good. You know, if everybody can remember, I think late February, March, April.
Yeah, because there was a drought.
Beginning of May. Yeah, exactly. The hose pipe ban.
Yeah. Hose pipe. And as soon as they did it,
exactly.
It didn't stop raining for 3 months.
the springtime was perfect. It was, you know, you couldn't ask for better. Maybe one or two people got touched by frost, but it was good. And then come, I think early June, late May, early June, heavens opened and didn't really stop.
Yeah.
Flowering time was hampered, poor fruit set, and the growing season was riddled with downy mildew, which is one of the
to me diseases. This would have been the worst summer I remember in England.
For me too, yes. So yeah, it's the same.
So how did your vines cope with that? You know, this was
Because of the lack of fruit on the vines, the vine still grows.
Yeah.
And the energy it takes out of the soil and gets from the sun, it has to go somewhere. So without the fruit, it put all the energy into shoot growth.
Okay, so a lot of vegetative
growth. So we have a lot of vegetative growth.
Yep.
And that can cause complications and implications for the next season.
Yeah, because if they go hell for leather in 1 year, they tend to be a lot quieter the second year.
Yeah, particularly with the fruit as well. It's something that's called floral initiation.
Yeah.
So this year's crop was preformed in the buds last summer.
Yep.
And to ensure having a good floral initiation, which means the bunch numbers and the bunch sizes are determined, you need a good summer.
Okay.
So my expectations for this coming season are not brilliant.
In terms of crop volume. Yeah, but if you
quality is something which we can manage and maintain throughout the growing season through the removal of leaves, trimming, keeping the canopy as open as possible, and a good spray regime.
Yeah, yeah.
For those that use chemicals, it works.
Yeah, the organic guys are probably struggling a bit.
Might be slightly, but yes.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And so do you think, what other implications for this year are there from last year? So you possibly a poor fruit loading.
Poor fruit development from last year. So this year at the moment, we got bud burst about 4 or 5 days ago. The buds are now 1.5 centimeters
in long,
just starting to show the third leaf, but still folded.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got lightly touched by frost about 3 weeks ago, but when I say lightly, I do mean very lightly.
Yeah, yeah, that was for bud burst.
Yeah, but the earliest buds that had moisture in them had been burnt. So, but we've lost only maybe 1%.
Yeah.
So nothing too major to worry about at the moment. So getting through this process of bud burst, one can only keep one's fingers crossed and hope that we'd see some more sunshine and the weather's good.
What about the cost of spraying? You said that you used a lot of sprays. How much sort of extra cost did you have to allow for last year's rain? Is it a 10% increase?
I don't know. I just ordered the stuff.
About volume, number of sprays.
There was. I put on generally more spray rounds last year because of the weather conditions and trying to keep the disease under control. If we have a nice, dry, warm summer, then we can spread the spray program. Wider between applications.
Yep.
Therefore, less number of applications, reducing the cost of total amount of spray.
So you don't when you've got wet conditions, you don't put more spray on. You just do it more often.
Yeah. And it's there if you're good at spotting the disease in the first place, catching it before it develops too far.
Yeah.
And then keeping that in control.
What about, I've seen a lot of vineyards, they used to put roses in front of the vines, and someone told me a long time ago it's because roses get the diseases first.
They do, that is the theory behind it. They still do it in France. The disease is powdery mildew, and the vines directly get it before the vines, the roses get it before the vines, and you can use that as an indicator. But these days, larger vineyards have weather stations, other monitoring systems, and a good vineyard manager should know their vineyard sites, what the weather should be like at certain times of the year, what the diseases, what weather conditions they...
So you should be able to predict the pressure without even going into the vineyard almost.
To a degree, you watch weather forecasts, you somewhat make up your own predictions. You notice how much moisture content there is about in the mornings, the temperatures are like, how quickly the vineyards dry off, and all those things. And a good vineyard manager should be able to keep the disease control and keep it in check.
Okay, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Okay. Excellent.
Cheers, bud.